continuing the testing. Test. And we're having a normal conversation over here. Move this chair a little bit. Good evening and welcome to the Outyard. Hello and welcome to the Outyard. I'm Peter Crow, coming to you from Portland, Maine, and today we're going to be talking about silence. Hopefully you noticed the immediate irony of that. To talk about silence is obviously to destroy it, but I like to think of them as two sides of the same coin. Silence gives birth to our conversation. Silence is the space in which we consider our thoughts before we speak. And sometimes an experience can be so profound that we just need to talk it out a bit. Today, we're specifically going to be talking to Jeremy Bloom and Eric Hilton about their personal experiences with Vipassana meditation. If you've never heard of that before, I had never heard of that before I talked to these guys. It is a meditation tradition passed down, and it is a free silent retreat offered around the world. All you got to do is sign up, find a place that you can get to, and they house you and they teach you how to meditate, and they feed you too. So 10 days of silence. Why would you do a crazy thing like that? Most of us have never considered being silent for more than a couple minutes. On the website, they say, learn how to meditate. So that's one reason you would do it. Although I think the experience is much deeper and much more profound than just learning how to meditate. Although that is the basic skill you walk away with, it seems. People would probably go to this seeking some kind of clarity, clearing up their minds, looking for self-control, self-improvement. And I think probably some people would go there seeking a kind of sacred communion with whatever they perceive as the divine. So Vipassana, on the website, they say Vipassana means to see things as they really are, which immediately sounds totally profound and seems like something that you probably ought to be able to do. Don't you want to see things how they really are and not how they aren't? It says it's one of India's most ancient techniques of meditation. It was taught in India more than 2,500 years ago as a universal remedy for universal ills, i.e. an art of living. For those who are not familiar with Vipassana meditation, an introduction to Vipassana by Mr. Goenka is available in videos online. You can hear his voice. What I failed to realize before this conversation with these guys is the entire teaching is relayed in videos from this one teacher, so that's a really interesting aspect of it. That might sound like a red flag right off the bat. It kind of did to me at first. It made me suspicious. I thought, whoa, only one guy relaying this whole tradition. How do we know it's not a lie? How do we know he's not a CIA shill? How do we know the video isn't full of subliminal messages? Or maybe that he's just someone of questionable character, like one of these crazy cult leaders we're always hearing about. But if that's what you're thinking and your skeptical alarm is going off, just go to the website and check this guy out. Check out his voice and his videos. The website is dhamma.org, dhamma.org. And this Goenka fellow, as soon as you hear him speak, you feel the weight of his presence. This guy has clearly done his meditating. It is a weighty presence, and you feel it across time through the video screen. His words
are clear as a bell, and they bring clarity to your mind. Clearly, this guy has done a lot of work, and he wants to share it, and he's no longer with us. And you can see why people in this tradition would say, well, let me just show you a video of my teacher, because I could not begin to explain it as well as he can. This seems like one of those cases.
It's a 10-day residential course, and it's offered everywhere in India, Asia, 10 centers in North America, 3 in Latin America, 8 in Europe. They have places in Australia, New Zealand, the Middle East, and Africa. So you should be able to get to one of these if you really think it sounds cool. And it's a remarkable, it would seem a remarkable free gift to humanity. And they're also teaching it in prisons. And they have, I thought this was interesting, a special 10-day executive course for world leaders and such. Business executives and government officials. So, sitting in silence, not an easy thing to do. Not something a lot of us do these days. People have always been able to avoid the silence by using small talk to fill the air with meaningless chatter and gossip, anything to keep the mind occupied. And avoid what? What is it we're avoiding? Silence is like a horrible mirror sometimes. Silence can represent our fear of the unknown because it is so unfamiliar. And sometimes things inside of us that we have refused to look at are also unfamiliar. And we have no practice being silent, so we have no idea what it's like or what could possibly happen if we remain alone with ourselves. These days, silence is easier to avoid than ever. A lot of people have never even thought about it. Filling every waking moment with news or Netflix or podcasts, just filling up the air every second. Playing out alternate personalities on massive multiplayer online role-playing games. I mean, how many people these days take the time to notice what it is they're actually thinking? There are televisions everywhere, in stores, in bars, in restaurants. I remember as a kid being bewildered when I walked into other people's houses where the custom was to just have the television on all day, just playing all day in the background. And they would sometimes have conversations with each other, but the TV is always there, just broadcasting ideas into your brain, surreptitiously. And sleeping with the television on has become a favorite American tradition, which was even commemorated in a song by Billy Joel, I believe. Sleeping with the television on. And this creeps into our dreams and our subconscious. And there's so much noise in our brains constantly. Vipassana might be more valuable now than ever before. Silence is considered a great occult virtue for those who study those things, the mysteries and the magical traditions, the Egyptian traditions. The Egyptian god Horpokrat, or as the Greeks say, Harpocrates, was considered the god of silence. The characteristic gesture of Harpocrates is the single finger over the lips, signifying his sacred silence. The reason the keeping of this silence is considered sacred or holy is because the holiest of mysteries is considered to be unpronounceable, unspeakable, unsayable, ineffable. Therefore, silence comes closest to grasping, holding, expressing the most sacred and holy of mysteries. In secret societies, silence is, of course, of great value, and you don't get to progress up the ladder unless you can keep a secret. Silence is perhaps the original secret, the hole in the hub of the wheel around which other things revolve. Silence could, in a mystical way, be considered the great Virgin Mother, from which all things come and all things return. When you think about it that way, you can see why it's held in such high esteem by sages and mystics. I was really looking for this Aleister Crowley quote to read, and his writings are so dense and winding that I couldn't find it, but I remember him expounding on the values of silence in this one passage, and then it ends with the exclamation, "Oh, may the hour of my silence return," because obviously he sees the irony in talking and talking and talking about silence and how good it is and not actually practicing it. Before we get started, I thought I'd set the tone by reading some of the great minds that we tend to revere, some of their thoughts on silence. Here's what Confucius say about silence. Silence is a true friend who never betrays. Pythagoras is credited with saying silence is better than unmeaning words. Francis Bacon says silence is the sleep that nourishes wisdom. Benjamin Disraeli says, silence is the mother of truth. Mother Teresa says, we need to find God, and he cannot be found in noise and restlessness. God is the friend of silence. See how nature, trees, flowers, grass, grows in silence. See the stars, the moon, and the sun, how they move in silence. We need silence to be able to touch souls. That's Mother Teresa. Silence is as deep as eternity, speech as shallow as time. That's Thomas Carlyle. Here's Aldous Huxley. After silence, that which comes nearest to expressing the inexpressible is music. I like that one. Saying, obviously, that silence best expresses that which is inexpressible. Walter Elliott says, the desert has its holiness of silence, the crowd its holiness of conversation. I like that, too. I like acknowledging the balance. Silence is a virtue, and so is conversation. Only by going alone in silence without baggage can one truly get into the heart of the wilderness. All other travel is mere dust and hotels and baggage and chatter. I like that. That's John Muir. Ansel Adams, when words become unclear, I shall focus with my photographs. When images become inadequate, I shall be content with silence. Edgar Allan Poe says, the true genius shudders at incompleteness and usually prefers silence to saying something which is not everything it should be. Claude Debussy said, music is the silence between the notes. And he said that before Miles Davis did. Not dissing Miles, just gotta give some credit to Claude. If you haven't checked out Debussy, you're missing out. Khalil Gibran says, only when you drink from the river of silence shall you indeed sing. And when you have reached the mountaintop, then you shall begin to climb. And when the earth shall claim your limbs, then you shall truly dance. Khalil Gibran, what a wacky guy. Pierre Bourdieu says, the most successful ideological effects are those which have no need for words and ask no more than complicitous silence. That's kind of sinister, almost. Here's another Aldous Huxley quote. Great is truth, but still greater, from a practical point of view, is silence about truth. By simply not mentioning certain subjects, totalitarian propagandists have influenced opinion much more effectively than they could have by the most eloquent denunciations. Oh, Aldous Huxley. There we see the double-edged sword of silence and secrecy. And here is another Aleister Crowley quote. Having to talk destroys the symphony of silence. I love that one. All right. Now that we've made these considerations, I think you'll enjoy this conversation I had with Jeremy and Eric. They were really excited to talk about their experience. It sounded like it was totally profound. And they gained a lot of value from Vipassana practice. Jeremy returned twice, so he's been silent for a total of 30 days put together, which is just incredible when you think about it. But I will let them describe the rest of it. So one last note before we get started. All of us were sharing the same room during this conversation. I had these gents over to my humble abode, and all of us were sharing a rhubarb dandelion tea that I had just made fresh from the dandelions and rhubarb in my backyard. Just a splash of lemon to kind of bring it all together. That's to just bring you into our sensory experience in the spring. I'm Peter Crow. Enjoy the outyard.
Okay. Yeah. I hit record, man.
So welcome to the outyard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Do you guys want me to say your full names or just first names?
Say a full name.
Alright, yeah. So I'm here with Jeremy Bloom and Eric
Hilton.
And these guys, we've both made it through the Vipassana experience, which is, I'm not even sure I'm qualified to say what it is, but it's a silent meditation retreat where you are silent for 10 days.
10 days.
10 days. Of silence, which is a feat most of us cannot imagine or comprehend, maybe even desire. It sounds really tough. It probably sounds to a lot of people like hiking up the Mount Everest on one foot or juggling while surfing while drunk. Something that just seems out of the realm of possibility.
It was freaking hard. I almost quit at one point.
Did you?
Of course, I had to go through that part.
It's a long 10 days.
So that's my opening. It sounds like you guys have a lot to say about it.
Yeah, no, so. We haven't talked about this at all. So, like, this is the first time we get to even talk about our experiences together. And you've done it once. You just finished getting back.
I just finished.
And I just did my third one a couple months ago.
Solid.
Yeah.
It's a life changer. I tell everybody, put it on your bucket list.
I agree with that.
And I'm choosing to do it annually, at least once a year.
Wow.
It's that strong of a practice. And the cool thing about it is, how they do it is, it's not religious. It's not spiritual. Even though it's of the Indian culture, it's the original teachings. The preserved technique of the Buddha 2,500 years ago that he utilized to become self-aware and become enlightened. And they preserve that. But they keep it so it's not religious, not spiritual, just as a lifestyle technique. I'm right, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to be referring to the
master. It's a non-sectarian meditation technique.
beautiful.
That just happened to work for the Buddha also.
Well, I worked for the Buddha and, you know, thousands and millions of people since then. It's like humans are this, they figured out like how humans work so long ago. Like they know that after it takes 3 days for the human to unwind. And you don't even get to start the actual Vipassana until 3 days in because of that.
Oh gosh, I feel that way.
And yeah, I mean, well, that's like why people have, you know, the blues on Sunday night. They don't get 3 days to truly unwind. They like get stuck right before they're just unwound. They gotta go back to freaking work. And it's funny, it's just so true. We really need like 3 days. So 4 day work weeks would work.
Yeah, yeah. I tried to make that work, but with four kids in the house.
You never really get a day off.
No. It's I try to get 3 minutes to unwind here and there and make that work. But enough about me.
Right now is working for you.
Mm.
This, the fact that we are in a house with no children right now is nothing short of a miracle.
Yeah, that means that you, yeah, you got this covered.
Yeah.
Got it all set.
I think because of our time restraints, we are going to make it all the way through.
Yes, we are.
So it's a lineage that's been preserved by teachers.
Is it a teacher? What? How do you pronounce his name?
S.N. Goenka.
Goenka, who passed away in 2013.
I know. I'm so upset. I was like right when I did my first one. I was so sad to find out that he wasn't alive when I got out. Because I was going to go to India and visit him.
Me too. Me too. I found out at the end that he was passed away. Because the whole time during this process, yeah. his presence is there with us.
Mm, every day.
He starts off the meditations with his instructions, with chanting, and then with instructions. And then at and so you received him, his voice, his recorded voices, I think from 1993 was the recordings were from.
Yep.
And then at the end of the day, around 7:30 in the evening, every night you would watch an hour and 15 minute discourse video where he would go and watching him and his wife, from years ago and talking about how, yes, this is what you experienced today. Yes, the pain that you felt, exactly. That's the process, like Jeremy was saying, like the 3 days. Like, you have to go through that to be trained properly, be able to start going through this process. Because he guides you through the whole 10 days through a systematic process. That is a preserved tradition. Yeah. So they don't deviate at all. And it's so beautiful.
All right, that's why, like, everybody gets the same exact teaching. Because it's all done by Goenka, by video. So, like, the teachers that are there with us, you know, they're really assistant teachers, and they are there to answer questions, and they're trained that way, but, like, we all really get the teaching from that one guy. Everybody, all around the whole world, that's who's teaching, the one guy. And it works every time. Well, it works in different ways. I had a very different experience this third time, but there's just magic all over the place.
The guy's hilarious, too. He was a comedian, he said, before in his prior life, I don't know, becoming realized or whatever, but
his previous incarnation.
He was a comedian, and so this guy, and he's so intelligent. He's one of the most intelligent dudes that I've ever heard speak, and so the way that he lays this information out to us, because he always starts his day discourse, movie discourse at the end of the night. It's movie night. You meditate all day long, and then you have this discourse, and he starts off with the discourse. Day three is over. You have 7 days left. And every single day he says that.
It's amazing. And you're like, day nine is over. And you're like, oh my God, day nine is over. Really? I did 9 days of silence? What?
But it's a trip, man. I mean, like, the whole process is so amazing. And it's very simple. And, I mean, because you're not speaking to anybody. There was like 40, 50 dudes there. There's about 70 women there as well, too, but we're all segregated. But in the meditation hall, we share the space, you know, half and half. But they give you a room, they feed you vegan food, and it's super cool. And to, like, to live with bros in silence that I didn't even know. Like, I knew a couple of them I talked to at the beginning. Mm. But to live with them in silence, to, like, not be able to communicate, it's great because find out how talking just messes up everything.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. It's like you get to, you know, break the silence and talk to them, and very quickly you're like, oh, this was a lot cooler before. I mean, it's great to talk to everybody, but you start realizing your own... Actually, seriously, for me, I would start realizing my own failings in communicating some things and just realizing, you know, that I'm not even able to always say what I'm really wanting to say. And, yeah, sometimes silence would be the better way. And it's amazing. You feel like brothers with these people and you didn't say anything to them. You know, like I had a roommate the last two times. I had switched rooms after the first day for one reason or another, and like snoring or whatever the case was, and so the person came late after the silence started, and I didn't know their name. I didn't know what they sounded like at all, and I lived with them in a room for 10 days. And I thought that was the coolest thing. It's just because you really just get this sense of brotherhood out of nothing, except being in the same space.
Sharing space.
Right. You're sharing the bathrooms and you're eating together. And so, like, you're interacting, but you're never talking.
But you're being civil to each other.
It's more than. Very.
That's a real communication.
Right. You get to the deeper, like, the deeper core of the people that you're around, you know, because you don't have all this mental mind talk, jibber jabber, or whatever. I need to impress you and say hi to you in the morning, every morning, when I open the door, thank you, you know, like, you eliminate all that stuff, it gets to the root of just true rawness of, I'm a brother, that's it. You know, it's really, really nice, really nice. And I appreciate that, man, that was a trip, dude, but at the end when they let us break our noble silence, that was hilarious, dude. I had to get away from that because people just let it rip. People were all happy to talk to you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard. It's like, how do I talk?
You didn't feel ready to talk.
I mean, like, I wanted to for, like, every day. Like, I want to tell my roommate, bro, what a great day. It was a mountain today, dude. It sucked, you know? But, like, no. Like, it was because you respect the noble silence. You respect that peace and tranquility inside.
So much.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's made me appreciate having so much silence. Like, I used to be such a music listening person. Sometimes, you know, I remember not too long ago, like, watching TV, listening to something, doing work on the computer, you know, and talking on the phone all at the same time. And it's like, I got nothing for that anymore. I don't even want to hear the radio when I'm in the car. I can sit in silence and look at the wall for a really long time. I'm well trained for silence. Like, I don't need to interact anymore if I didn't want to.
What was the weirdest part of that for you?
Of the silence?
No, of just the whole thing, because it gets weird, dude. Like, when you're just in your head, you know, like, by yourself, it gets weird.
Oh, yeah. Well,
did you experience anything, like, metaphysical?
Oh, for sure, bro.
Okay.
This is what I want to get into.
Okay.
So, you know... So I had two different experiences. Well, I've had different metaphysical experiences, and this last time was the third, and it was a negative metaphysical experience. The first two, I experienced what I think everybody does when they get quiet, and I think it's the ideal thing where you really, like, let go and you follow all their directions and you really focus on meditating as much as possible in the exercise. And, you know, on, like, day 7 and 8, you start tingling. And you're, like, literally feeling the cells of your body vibrate. You can feel the vibrations. I remember being up all night long, like, laughing, like, what the hell is going on? And you can't ask a question. Like, the first time when it happened, I didn't really ask too many questions of the teacher. But I learned that you should always ask everything that you can possibly think of, because it's just fun to play with. And they don't even have all the answers, but it's just good to talk about it, because you're not talking about anything.
Like, afterwards you ask the teacher?
Yeah, like, when something happens, people are usually describing, like, what's going on when they're meditating, or that they can't focus. Why can't they focus? Most people are just annoyed that they can't focus. You really have to, like, go easy on yourself, and it's funny how much you hear that. And I had to, like, the first time, I had to find my 5-year-old child to be my coach to myself, to stop yelling at myself for 3 days when it was beginning. Because I couldn't, like, shut it off. I just couldn't stop getting mad for losing focus and not doing the exercise. But that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's like all you ever do is, like, try to stop doing that and breathe. So anyway, the metaphysical thing the first two times was definitely that physical
vibration. But this last time I had a dream on like the seventh night, and it was like I was swimming through shards of glass. It was a really difficult sit. It was much harder than the first two, I would say. But they're all hard. But this was like, there was just like a, I don't know if it was a negative or a more realistic in life kind of tinge to it. But because for the most part, I just felt like I didn't hit any big high. You know, like I was very even keeled. And when I came out, I definitely felt the difference. But I didn't feel like I went to some magical place. I just felt really clean and clear. And but also, like, you know, you still have some of the negative stuff jabbing at you a little bit. But anyway, so I was swimming through glass shards, and you know, you go in and out of like
dream shards. Dude, I didn't get in glass shards, bro.
No, I know. Intense. No, it is. It was so intense. But you go in and out of dreaming, right? So you, like, you don't know because you're lying there and you're resting and you're sort of having these waking dreams.
When you're sleeping in the bed, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude.
So, like, you know, you're. I mean, I would always wake up at 2 and literally lay there until 4 or 4:30 when it's time to wake up, and I would just be like awake but not awake. It was so weird because you open your eyes, you're not dreaming. You close your eyes, you're totally dreaming. And you were like in control of it. Like, I don't know, did you experience that at all?
Kind of. Wow. Kind of.
This, I definitely feel like I got a better picture of that over 3 times and wouldn't really say that about the first time.
Well, I say the dreams. I mean, dude, that was wild because, like, I as a veteran, you know, I have my challenges with dreams and such. And usually it's, you know, zombies and end of the world stuff and this and that, you know, and being chased. But like this time, dude, and I haven't been dreaming much lately, but this, man, oh my God, dude. Like, I was dreaming like crazy, and I was talking in my sleep like crazy.
Mm.
Like, I'd wake up, hear myself talking.
Really?
My roommate's laughing at me right now. But I mean, I had some deep, weird dreams, dude. And like during the day, like they give us breaks, I would go and nap for like 15 minutes, and I had these deep dreams, dude. Like, I'd be in a whole nother world. So in a way, like, I was in a whole nother world the whole time, dude. And you go to some deep levels there in the subconscious, which is cool. It was super fun, man. I want to say, like, when I was there meditating, like, I, like, sitting there, and I've never, before this, I never meditated more than an hour before my life. Like, you know, over an hour at one sitting, you know?
Right.
Never done that.
Right, you got the morning 4:30. The morning 4:30 to 6:30. You got the 2-hour shot in the morning.
Oh my God, that was the hardest one, dude. But like, I'll say,
it's hard, but it was also really peaceful. Like, I love meditating in the morning. And so, like, the quietness and just not, you know, just the world is quiet, it feels like. I love it.
Everything was quiet. What are you talking about?
It's true. Nobody's talking.
But it was, I totally, that was a trip to the dreams, man. But I'll tell you, the big thing was, like, when I'm sitting there meditating, going through the process, all these thoughts that come racing in. I think you mentioned a little something about it, dude. Like, oh my God, dude. Like, and I have ADHD, like, severely, right? Like, I got kind of a hold on to it. But, like, there I am, you know, going through the process. And then, like, this thought pops in my head, like, a lot of sexual stuff. Like, so it's digging deep in, like, my psyche, right, dude? Like,
sure.
So it's something I have to pay attention to. But I couldn't pay too attention because then I'm, like, fantasizing and not focusing on the meditation.
Right.
So it was really intense. And, like, then I had childhood memories, like, crazy. Like, times, like, back when I used to drink and drug and I didn't remember, parts of my life started coming to me, dude. And it was absolutely amazing. And I went and asked the teacher, it's like, hey, I'm having these thoughts. He's like, ignore it. I'm like, okay. And then Grishenka or whatever would talk about it in the discourse that night, explaining it, you know.
That's what was amazing. Is like, that's a good point. I you're always, it feels like he's talking to you every night. This guy is on record, and everybody in the whole world, millions of people every year, see the same freaking video, and he feels like you're talking to you because nobody else could possibly have that experience. But clearly we all have the same experience. Like, you know, relatively, of course. I mean, there's always difference in details and how we describe it and what we feel or whatever, but generally speaking, he knows what's going on every day with everybody.
Exactly, and that's why the instructor said ignore the thoughts, because he knows exactly everybody goes through the same exact thing. And that made sense to me 2 days later, because it's the big word that they talk about is equanimity. To be equanimous. What a great word.
Best word.
And if I could, I want to explain it, then you can explain it if you want to.
No, please.
I would want to make this a regular practice in everything. So being equanimous to things, such as if I'm in an Indian-style position and my foot's numb, it's for me to be able to just observe, be an observer, and pay attention to that foot that's tingling, and to understand, because they teach you that everything is always changing on a molecular level. So if you can notice that, you know, and see that, then the pain goes away. It's very interesting, and it's also about not reacting. Being equanimous, it's about not reacting, not getting attached to the pain. Because when we attach it, we adopt it, we bring it into our being, who we are. So it's just no, and to not be reactive in life.
Right, to not react. Power. To not react. Like that seems to be the problem to solve. Not react.
Well, look at what you do when you react all day long when you don't have to. Like you see where you don't have to react and why you shouldn't. Because when we react, sometimes it's tragic in our life.
Mm.
So it's to be able to go through life and not to pick up all the junk of everybody every day and this and that. And just, okay.
Mm.
So that was that being an equanimous man and like the thoughts when they came up, it's like, And this is a cool thing about healing because I'm a big man about like healing and purification. I'm in like a 4-month a cleanse right now. I'm about to go up to the woods for 2 weeks and fast on no food, just water.
Wow.
And so about the healing on this, like, so I had these thoughts come up and I have all these women that I slept with back in the day that I don't remember, you know, when I was drinking, like, I feel shame. Mm. Okay. So I feel the shame, but I don't hold on to the shame, the feeling. I observe the shame. I'm feeling shameful. Okay, I can detach from that. And I let it float right out. So then I just had all these people and situations just flowing through me. But it was what had to happen. Because to me, dude, it feels like that pile of leaves that you like rake up in the corner of your lawn. And you like leave it there for years. And then you go clean it years later. And it's like piles of wet, matted leaves, layer after layer.
Maggots.
That's what my mind was like, dude.
Yeah.
Just like pulling off layers of that. And then deeper layers of thoughts and traumas would start to come up.
Mm.
So that was the weirdest thing that I experienced, and I was super grateful.
Mm.
It was the hardest thing to do because I was losing my mind. Like my PTSD like was going crazy.
Mm.
Like depression, anger, like ugh. Like
but right, so right. So okay, so like my own experience, you know, intense in different ways, but like that's, you know, I can appreciate that that's really intense. So, like, by allowing that to go without reacting to it, like, I mean, that's what I would call the magic, right? Because you spend so many hours doing that, and it actually helps. Like, when I get out of there, like, I want that to be the solution for drug addicts and people in crime, like, everything. Like, just sitting and being quiet, like, seems to, like, just wake you up to all of these things. I mean, it's not just sitting, as you know, it's a little bit more exercise than that. It's quite a brain exercise. And there's so many things that go on, like, you know, like you're talking about the mental, and, like, wouldn't you say that they're kind of using the physical to sort of coach the mental? Because you're, like, exploring physicality, really. Like, that whole not moving when your foot's numb is you're sitting in your position meditating. And you're, you know, ideally you don't move for an hour.
The determination.
The
rounds,
determination.
3 times a day.
Right, right. But you know, in that last 15 minutes, it's hell. But it gives you all the confidence in the world to like achieve everything, like if you can.
Let's talk about the process of that hell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you'd like to know.
Oh yeah.
Because. The process,
and
I love it because, like I said, like we said this it's set up.
So you mean
properly.
Like the meditation process?
The meditation, the first 3 days focus on the triangular. I might speak like Gershenkin there once in a while, you know, but
it's okay. We'll take impressions.
The guy's amazing, but first 3 days, focus on your breathing, natural breathing, and the triangular space below your nose. Just focus on the skin, the area, to become aware of the itch. To become, you're not pointing at it like I'm doing right now, but you're becoming aware of an itch, a vibration, or whatever. It's becoming self-aware of yourself. And then after the fourth day, I think the fourth day, they do this, the Vipassana meditation, and that's the bomb they drop on you for 2 hours, and it just, like, people Yeah, people can lose it during that. It's sweet, bro.
Yeah, like, that was actually, I like that.
That was wild. Yeah. Because, like, it takes you through the whole body and, like, scanning the whole body and becoming familiar with the whole body. And that's, like, the initiation, like, rites of passage, I think, at that point, kind of. Or I say initiation. Because then the rest of it, it's a scan they do where they start head and go to head to toe and then back up. And it's scanning from the head all the way down through your whole body, feeling every aspect. And for me, I mean, like, I feel like I received it a little differently than some people. I think we all do what makes sense for us. But for me, it got to the point towards the end of it where they teach you different techniques each day. So you get bored and you're like, I'm sick of doing this all day. But then they teach you something new and you're like, it's a whole new breakthrough. But then, like, later towards the end of it, they teach you how to penetrate in the body.
Bongle.
And what is it called?
Well, bongle is when you just completely dissolve. That's
bongle.
Yeah, you were on your way there. Keep going.
Yeah, but totally bongling out and preparing for that. You penetrate into the body where you can actually then take from feeling your skin, feeling the presence and awareness of that, then you start to feel inside the body. Like, dude, I know I can feel my lungs. I can feel the pleura around my lungs. Uh-huh. I can feel my heart in the different chambers. Mm. I could go and talk to my liver, and all of a sudden my liver starts to quiver. Like, wild stuff. So you get, like, whatever, dude, quantum physics, like metaphysical, like, whatever. It's, like, achieving all those realms, you know, because, and I'm going to let you explain the bonga in a second here. I want you to, but, like, after you go through this process, and this is, like, the coolest metaphysical thing I received. Then you talk about the bonga. They give you different pillows and such to, like, sit on to get comfortable so you can make this work for yourself over 10 days.
Did you make a pillow city?
I my favorite one to perform was two big pillows. And it was like me and I was riding the golden bull. That's just how I saw myself, because I would do this scan over an hour to the point over and over to where I was, I dissolved. And to the point where I am just, like, you know, just buzzing in, like, crystal light, riding the golden bull, and just, like, not moving a single inch, dude, like, hardly breathing.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was the best thing I received. Please share with everybody about the bonga.
Oh, I like that. All right.
Yeah. Well, before I talk about the bonga, the pillow city is a funny thing. It's like people go in there, and I did the same thing. Especially if you've not been a big meditator. It's like you go in there, you're doing, like, a monstrosity amount more of meditation than you've ever done in your life, if this is your first time. And here's the opportunity. You've got, like, stools and chairs and big pillows and little pillows. And so for 3 days, while all that beginning is happening, you're trying to get comfortable and figure out how to sit. And it's just so funny. You know, eventually most people will, like, blow up all the pillows and have 50 pillows, and then at some point they pare it down and just have something simple. But, like, so many people, like, you just turn around once in a while and you see somebody completely propped up on this, like, cloud city of pillows. And it's just so funny what people do to get comfortable sitting. Anyway, that's just a side note.
Well, it's an important side note, because
it is. You like learning to get comfortable so you can sit. You have to be able to be comfortable.
And it leads into your bonga explanation, because when your foot starts to go numb, there's only one way to handle it and to understand it.
Yep.
Which would lead into the bonga.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, like, when you start... Well, basically, I guess back to what we were saying before, you know, your foot goes numb and it hurts. And the minute you move it, it's hell. But it's really, you're losing feeling in it. And then, you know, but what's possible is this bongle thing. Total disillusionment, or total, not disillusionment, it's just disillusion, right? Your body dissolves. I guess just dissolves. And I experienced that once, and that was really cool, because you basically, just like when you're like that focused on your breath and your mind is feeling your body, all of a sudden things just sort of can disappear. And when you get to that place, I guess the point that we're talking about, when you get to that place, that pain, you didn't move and it still hurts, but it's like gone to the point of numb. You're not reacting to it. You're breathing through it. You're allowing it to happen. And it just sort of disappears with the rest of your body. You don't really, you just sort of like stop feeling all the surfaces.
Your body disappears.
That's what the word bongle sort of means, to dissolve.
So can you see your body?
Well, you're meditating and you're constantly in touch with like your body because you're feeling the scanning as you're going up and down. And so when it dissolves, like you start to lose the feeling of all of these things. And you just feel, well, that's when you feel your consciousness, dude. Like that's where you're like, dude, like this is this extra thing up here. Like that was you talk about it and that's fine. The difference between intellectual and experiential.
Yes, yes.
And so it's like you talked about it forever and you sit in spiritual classes and you go to yoga and you get taught this, that, whatever. But like you actually experience, you know, the third eye and your consciousness being a very separate thing that is not you in the world. Like it is this thing. And it's like we were saying when we got here.
For people who are listening,
yeah.
Jeremy is gesturing above his head, like in front of his third eye, but slightly above his...
looking up.
So are you saying that this experience, would you qualify it as being above your body?
I would qualify it as being outside my body. You know, you just sort of like, you realize that that you're more than the physical. Like you can sense it. I mean, you can sense it anyway, but like when you're really that quiet, all of a sudden you can almost grab it because it's so clear. And that's what's communicating amongst all the people in the room.
Yes.
You know?
The ones that are doing it properly.
Yeah, so when you think about it, it's so clear. Yeah, right. Because there's definitely some people who left it like day 7 or 8 and they were driving me nuts, but I think they were driving themselves nuts. So like, yeah.
So you can leave whenever you want.
You can't, well...
You're not being held prisoner.
You're not supposed to, but no, you're not being held prisoner at all.
Well, and the cool thing, too, just side note, that they don't make you pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
Can you guys put a pin in it for 1 second? Yeah.
It's so funny. Knock at the door. That's like such a typical podcast.
This is fun. My first podcast.
Nice. I think me too, kind of. Other than like business stuff. Definitely never did this.
Sorry. I'll call you soon. Call me. Okay. Well, I'll see you. Yeah.
All good?
That was classic. Podcast I had scheduled for like several hours ago, just trying to show up.
Double book.
Okay. So, they don't make you pay for it. That's outrageous.
Well, it's beautiful because, so, the first time they say you don't have to pay for it because they're trying to keep ego out of it. Because if I pay for this, I pay for that meal, that's mine. I pay for that bed, that room, it's mine.
Right.
You know, so keeping that out of it, knowing that they have people that are in service, volunteering their time there, preparing your meals, doing everything to help you out. So
right, everybody's volunteering. There's only like the only paid staff is your like facility staff, and they're paid through the donations.
Exactly, which is a beautiful. So the donations come into play where they suggest that like if you come back again, you give a contribution,
and that contribution is paying for someone else to do it.
Exactly,
it's the pay it forward. It's the pay it forward,
nice.
And it's given based on value and your own abilities. And I feel that I have paid very little being broke, and but like it's been such an impact. Like you know, I'm probably if I have anything left at the end of my life, I will put that in my will to donate to my Vipassana Center.
That's awesome.
Because I owe them a lot.
Wow.
I think.
Okay, let's back up a little bit.
Because
clearly this is a thing of great value to you guys. So I want to get back into, like, the deep experience.
The deep stuff,
bro? Yeah. Let's wade into
Can
it.
Can I tell you, say something else that came up a few minutes ago then? That's good you're going back there. Because, like, I'm all about that, dude. Like, I'm all about going super deep, you know, and, like, you know, and going. And not, like, just above my body, but, like, to a higher stage of consciousness, right? And so on this day 4, when I do the Vipassana meditation, like they're doing the 2-hour meditation, and they're like taking you to the cosmos and such. Like it was pretty wild. And And I thought that was great. And like, and even after that, there was a guy that was walking down to his stairs, and he just stopped in the middle of the stairs. Mm. He was walking down his room. He stopped in the middle of the stairs and just started crying. Mm. A lot of the guys are freaking out. Oh, is he okay? Mm. It's like, I know a dude, like, no, he's in a good place right now. He needs to go through this.
Shit's going down.
You know, like, and he for like 25, 30 minutes was just there crying on the stairs, couldn't move. Because he was like brought into like the depths of like the nature of his being. Mm. And like, it was so beautiful. And I was thinking, like, you know, for me, like, because I've had a similar experience before where I have experienced the cosmos and experienced all that is in that way. Mm. It's from ayahuasca. Mm. You know, different. I didn't have to do as much work.
Right. I had that experience with acid for sure. Same thing.
You would say it's a similar experience to going several days into Vipassana.
It's similar in ways.
Similar in ways, similar, but definitely ways. Different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not being drug-induced and getting to a similar place, way more powerful, I think.
Well,
maybe not.
Well, I've been some places before, you know, so, but still.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, yeah. I've not tried ayahuasca.
But it's absolutely amazing, though, for what a person that has not had a metaphysical or spiritual experience, or whatever you want to call it, enlightening experience, whatever, this is an opportunity for them to experience that. So you think about all the millions and bazillions of people on the planet that are asleep. You know, they're just asleep, living in the illusion. Well, there, if you're not going to go, you know, try some plant medicine or try some other thing or whatever, or hold your breath for a really long time, like, do Vipassana. It's going to give you a good natural way of some enlightened state, enlightened understanding of what more is out there beyond the veil. Mm-hmm. You know, because otherwise, we're just playing the game, my mind's going, oh, Facebook, you know.
All right,
what I'm aware, being aware.
What I'm sort of like picking up from you guys is that there's this, you're both said you tapped into consciousness that is more than your body.
Mm.
Or outside of your body. So, and you just talked about the veil. So what I'm kind of hearing is, your experience is that consciousness is the motivating force behind the material world.
Mm.
Or your experience of the material world.
I would say awareness. I would say awareness is coming to me right
awareness
now.
Is a better word than consciousness.
Awareness of awareness, because you're focusing on yourself becoming aware. That's the process of how I receive this, is that you become focused on your physical self. You become aware of the things going on in your body, the little shakes, the itches, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so the more you become aware of that, you start to become... the more I focus on this one spot on my body, on my leg, and for hours, well, for days, the more I focus on that, the more I am aware, I am present.
Right.
I am conscious in that place of my body. And it then goes down to a scientific level of the molecular structure, the molecular aspect, because they teach that in this, that, you know, what we're made of molecules and atoms and all that stuff, you know, that's on the deeper levels. But there, that's where things manifest. And I think there, consciousness definitely comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you have you're a little bit more in control. So talking about the veil, like, you can see the truth of things more
mm-hmm.
there when you're deep like that. Because you can feel, oh my God, what's going on? Like, on these depths of things. You're not stuck in, like... Because otherwise, a lot of people don't feel their body. That's what I learned at the end of that. Because I didn't really feel my body. And
mm-hmm.
I'm very, I own a gym and like I work out, you know. And
yeah.
But like a lot of people aren't aware of their body. So in the veil, I mean, use that word, you know, keeps us unaware of the truth and the reality of the deeper realities of higher levels of consciousness of the state of being. So, yeah, so it helps break that veil a little bit. And
so... How would you describe or characterize higher levels of consciousness?
Particularly with Vipassana?
Mm. I mean, it's kind of like I was saying, or at least, I mean, there's a few things. It's, and, you know,
I mean, just, you know, well, just being quiet enough to listen to what's really going on in yourself, for yourself, you know, and like not letting things distract you outside, which I'm very guilty of in my life. So like, you know, creating like a focus that's just undisturbed by your, I mean, you're basically training yourself when you're there. Like, so much so that, like, I remember being, the last couple of years I've been struggling because, you know, you come out and after a couple months, you know, you're not doing what they've told you to do. Because 2 hours of meditation a day is hard to, seems hard to fit in. Although
it's a scheduling nightmare.
It's a scheduling nightmare, you know. And I mean, I don't have kids and I don't have a wife or anything like that. So it's easy to, it's kind of feels like, well, I should be able to do that. But yet I still don't do that. I'm lucky if I get a half hour in the morning, much less an hour. But when I do the hour, it's completely magical. But back to your question. So the question is like about consciousness.
Yeah, what do you reach when it's magical?
What do you reach when it's magical? I mean, for me, the magical, really just being so freaking centered and so in touch with the consciousness that exists and so in touch with this... with this undeniable fact that can never be proven, because that you just experience the universe within yourself. Like you experience like that vibration, you like experience the, like the stars and the space in between the stars, and you know, there it is, and like the consciousness and how we all, you know, work together, and like where all of the words about Jesus came from, like it felt like all that stuff started to make a lot more sense to me. You know, and you realize, you know, and also, like, yeah, you come to realize religions, you know, they have a good core, but, you know, they got a little messed up along the way. But they all had the right idea, and you're sitting in that right idea at about 7 days. It's, like, undeniable, and nobody's telling you. You are focused on talking, you know, Goenka's telling stories to do analogies of, like, what's going on, and why you might want this or that in your life, and disappointments of not getting something, and you're focused completely on yourself as the physical, like doing this mental exercise all day long. But then that kind of truth just sort of becomes undeniable. Like, and that we're all the same, and that we all have the same shit, and, you know, it's amazing. Yeah, we all have the same shit, and the universe is contained within ourselves. And like for me, the way that I interpret God, that's, you know, something that's just, that's what my heart is, you know. That's where God is, and we've all got one.
Totally. You know, I have a hard time answering this question, and because, I mean, I'm a spiritual traveler, and I've done a lot, you know, and this was a different experience, but I still got to a good height. And when, you know, I remember... You're just talking, Jeremy, like, you know, when I'm riding my golden bull and I have of light and I have perfect posture.
It's a very ego-centered vision. Anyway.
I was happy.
Right.
I had good posture, perfect posture. Mm. I perfected my posture. You know, so that was a state of enlightenment for me, to feel so comfortable and perfect in my body, where all the chakras, everything are like there, solid.
Yeah.
You know, so if you talk about being above the body, I did feel like I was there in that higher upper chakra operating through that level. You know, at one point there was a string that was pulling me up, you know, pulling me up straight from my, you know, like from the top of my head.
Yeah, I feel that sometimes.
And that was amazing. And like, there I am. And like, and we do these hour-long determination rounds where you can't move, you can't open your eyes, you can't move your hands, nothing. And you have to just stay there.
I mean, you can. It's strong determination. We're supposed to try.
They strongly
really
encourage
hard.
You.
Yes.
Like
yes.
You, if you move, switch your position 3 times today, try 2 times tomorrow.
Yeah.
They're very smart.
You guys were not going to back down.
Yeah.
But I found that, like, when I was...
it's hard.
It's very hard, but it was so worthwhile, man, because when I was there and just feeling the presence of being there in that hour of committed, myself being the traveler that said, I'm going to make it to the destination, because I can move, I can quit any time, but I was in pain or was in weird feelings. Like, I'm not used to this feeling in my body, you know? And then all of a sudden, like, you get to this place of achievement for one thing, but, like, very, feeling very satisfied in myself, which brings happiness, brings good emotions and such, which also elevates you consciously, too. Mm-hmm. So, so it, you know, it all ties into each other, all of it, you know, the whole, everything that you're doing for yourself, you know, physically, mentally.
Yeah, right.
You know.
That's a good way to put it. So you're accomplishing many trials, and then you get a feeling of satisfaction each day, each sit. You get, it's like getting a little higher on the mountain.
Bro, yes.
Yeah.
And yes. You're doing kind of a physical cleanse for yourself. And what do they feed you?
It's all vegetarian food.
What do they want to call it? Vegan, whatever. Yeah. Man, I'm sorry. I mean, it's fine. But I went from a ketogenic diet before that, and then I go there, and that's just like, a lot of fat and like a lot of meat and like and
no, there's no meat.
I did. No, I'm saying the ketogenic diet.
Oh, my bad. Sorry.
A lot of fat, a lot of meat and yeah. And a no carb, like low carbs. And then I go there and yeah, we're gonna feed you vegan food.
All
like
carbs.
Like they had fruit.
Yeah.
You know, they had like cereal, oatmeal every morning. It was the same stuff like every morning. The only meal that was different was lunch, and that was either what pasta, that was just vegan cool stuff, tofu, all that stuff, you know, like they serve at local Sprouts. I thought that was, you know,
that's a good, yeah.
It was just like local Sprouts, you know, nice. Feels a little cool. Yeah. And then dinner time, they just, it was tea time really. You go there and they had, if you wanted like a banana, apple or orange, you could and have tea,
but they didn't serve. First time. After that, no dinner, just tea.
Oh, yeah, the certain...
Which I thought I'd be, you know, I remember being really scared about all that, but it's kind of how I live now. I actually don't eat a lot at night.
Cool.
Yeah, it's weird.
You look good.
And then you sleep better. That's what I hear.
Yeah, it's so, well, that's the whole thing. We don't eat after noontime. So we meditate for 2 hours in the morning from 4:30. You know, you have a very specific schedule every day. 4:30 to 6:30, meditate, breakfast at 6:30. And then off with your day. For a couple hours in the morning, and you have some rest time, and then at 11:30 you're back for lunch, and you're supposed, or 11, you're supposed to be back for lunch, and then noontime, no more eating until the next day.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds scary to me.
Yeah, it seems scary, but like, it's amazing that really kind of, I mean, I'm not totally true to that. I definitely snack at night a little bit, but like, I don't really hanker for dinner.
I've acquired some good skills from that process, you know, like not having to listen to music all the time, you know, like being comfortable in silence, you know, and I know it sounds difficult, but like they give you the tools. See, that's the thing, like in the midst of my wanting to give up in the pain and it's trust the process.
Tree Bright, you really have to trust the process, right?
They have it broken down every day. Every meditation is a different block of instruction. They have it figured out because the Buddha did it one thing, you know. So I just say, what did you tell me before I did this Vipassana? I saw Jeremy at local Sprouts and I told him I was doing that.
I know, randomly. That's crazy.
And he's like, what he told me is that the thing that gets me through it or got me through it is that this is a technique that's been going on for 3,000 years, you know. And I'm like, so that's powering, you know, and very empowering. And so if you trust the process, I tell anybody they can be successful. You have to overcome yourself. It's always the case. But
it's always the freaking case.
It's always the case.
But you are your own blockade.
They give you everything you need. You need to sit in a chair because you can't sit whatever, you know, like on a pillow. You can do that.
You can.
It's and like they give us like, it's like 10 plus hours of meditation a day, right?
Yeah.
But like some of the blocks, you're like, meditate in your room. I meditated during those periods. But, like, I think some people, like, it was really like a free space for them to like, this is too much. I need to go sleep. Because, like, a lot of people were not.
Yeah, definitely meditating. People screw off and not meditate, right? Right. That's for sure. But, I mean, that was it. And I remember, you know, my first experience, I feel like I was the most, like, strict about, like, okay, I'm going to do exactly what they say. Even if it kills me, if I cry, I don't care. And then second time, it was a lot harder, but I still did it. And this third time, actually, sometimes I wonder if my experience was a little, like, dulled and weird. I didn't feel like I followed to a T. I mean, I did, but I could have done better.
Why?
Like, I could have just been more disciplined about my meditation
itself. Like, I feel like I let my mind wander too much.
Because you already knew it? Two times prior?
No, I was. It's just a matter of just being too distracted. And you know, it's like, it's almost like after doing a few of these, I've gotten a handle on myself. And it becomes much more of a choice to focus or not. And so it really takes the self-discipline to be like, okay, I am really going to focus. Just being here isn't all. Like, you have to do the exercise. And I feel like I definitely, like, let myself go too much and, you know, just too many thoughts.
I think that's a great thing for you, though. I think for everybody, like, the humility in it. Like, when we get to the top of the mountain.
Humility.
You know what I'm saying? Like, whoa, I did this already. I accomplished this mountain. Well, no.
Yeah.
No, like, no. Because as soon as, like, we get to that point in our life, that's when we think we have it all figured out. We block ourselves from any other expansion, I find, a lot of times.
Right.
So it's good to be humble, because that technique will constantly humble you if you let it. Like, and so it helped me to be in the humility. Like, I'm totally a hot mess right now, but, like, this is why I'm here. But it's tricky. Because I bet next time you go to your fourth Vipassana, you're gonna, like, dominate it, and you're gonna, like,
you learn from
what you went through the third time. You know, like, it's a series of perfection.
Yeah. Well, I would also on that, the very important lesson, though, really, is that there is no perfection. Anicca. We haven't said that word once, but that is a very key word, and that was a very good experience on this third one, because. I just felt like it should have been this amazing experience, comparable to the first two, and it was very, average, but it was still, I could tell that it was still good for me. It, like, solidified that I'm going to go every year from now on, because there was so many personal, I'm not getting into them now because it doesn't matter in this conversation, but, like, so many personal lessons. Like, of my own damage that I do to my life and myself happened in that whole shards of glass story. And so, like, you know, I made up this whole story about something that happened with a person there, and it literally affected me so much that, like, I let it affect me too much. And, like, you know, you can make up such stories and it totally gets in the way of focusing on what you're supposed to focus on, which was you and what you're doing.
Exactly you. Exactly.
Like, and I, like, it was such a good thing to look back on and be like, well, you didn't have the greatest experience in the world. That's what you get for paying attention to someone else.
I had a moment like that, bro.
Did you?
Yeah.
Very important lesson.
I walked out of the meditation hall and I'm like, I'm all like a hot mess, you know, because I just, like, did a determination round, dude, and I'm, like, still tingling.
Mm.
And I had to fart, you know, and so I walk out and, like, and eat females vegan food and such. They had cookies, by the way, once in a while too, right? And pudding. And so I go to open the door quickly, as close this door to me, and I just, like, you know, bust ass out the door, and there's some guys walking in, and, like, some, like, instructor, like, or the helpers, the senior students or whatever, older students, and I said, oh, I'm sorry. I spoke. I broke the noble silence. I said, I'm sorry. Mm. So in the midst of me farting on them. And then also speaking, and they, like, kind of gave me a look, like, whoa. But I think that guy just always looks like that anyways. but that also, like, tore me up for the rest of the day.
Mm.
And
that's exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about, right? Like, making a mistake.
Yeah. But what do you do in that situation? Like, that's what it teaches you.
Right. It should teach you that you don't react.
And there's the humility.
Equanimity. What?
Equanimity and humility.
And humility. Yeah, no, the humility of the fact that, like, it's not always perfect just because you go do this little pilgrimage. And you better fucking deal with that, because that's life. You can go off to a magical place and have not such a magical time sometimes. And it's still good for you because it was a magical time.
That you had to earn.
That you had to earn, and it is not, you know, not the happiest moments to look back on, but it's in your belt.
And definitely, like, I love that part of it. Like, I was determined, like, this sucks. Like, I want to quit. Like, it was that bad for me. And the biggest part was, like, the depression and the PTSD hitting me and such. But, like, I it's like, no, like, I'm going to do this. Because I had some friends that, I had a friend that went prior to me twice. And I think I told you about him. And he withdrew day 4 and day 5 on the two times he went.
Oh, wow. He went again and still left.
Yeah.
Huh.
And it's like, wow. Like, you know, and I see why anybody would want to quit. Like, I was experiencing it humbly myself. But I was like, no. And I've been through a lot of training in the military, so, like, I had to overcome my mind and believe in myself and believe that I could do it, you know, and I could do it. And so it forced me, in that strength of the warrior spirit, I had to invoke that, you know, which is a super good thing for anybody to get used to doing or be able to do in their life. You know, so definitely, like, that notch on my bedpost, bro, I'm all about that. And it's right. I like the good challenge, because it was a really good thing, man. Like, talk about the effects of consciousness and, like, what you get out of Vipassana. This is a life changer. It's a life changer. It's just because of, like, what your commitment for 10 days to sit there and for over 10 hours meditate in silence for 10 days, such a discipline, such an honor and respect to yourself, if you do it, which you can do it. But if you do it, I mean, like, man, you should be feeling really good about yourself, you know? And so
oh, yeah, it's badass.
It's a game changer. So, I mean, everybody should, if they can, go do it. And it's not about religion. It's not about spirituality. It's not about Buddhism or anything. No, it's about going there and overcoming yourself. You know, that's a big thing I experienced, you know, because I was the obstacle in all that. You know, truly in enlightenment, we are the obstacle, because in our material world here, our density, we're stuck here, you know, and our human selves, you know. And but if you can, like, deny yourself, man, and, like, go deep and just ride the golden bull like I was, man, and, and, like, scan the body and, like, become, like, in
bungle.
And bungle out, bro. Like, I don't know if I should be talking that way here, but no, whatever. Get wild and bungle out, and, you know, it's amazing, and it can be achieved. So, and that was great, because, like I said, the only time that I've gotten to those places generally was with the theogens, you know, and such. You know, but to be able to go there and to become aware and such like that, you know, without just myself and my breathing, that was impressive. That was impressive. And it shows that we all can do that, you know. So they preserve this. They're popping these things up all over the world, right? The centers, and it's a great system. And they're doing it because it's all a charity and service. There's nothing bad at all about it. Nobody's making money off of it, I don't believe, in any way, you know.
No, none.
Sounds like it'd be hard to.
Well, it's because of the rules they have in place, like where the money goes and such. No, like, it's totally, it's amazing. And so,
yeah, it's totally a transparent organization.
Totally. And for the world, it's just a great thing. You know, no one can complain about it. The only people want to complain about it is people that don't want to, like, sit there and do the work. So it was
great.
10 days to take off from your life is a big, you know, bite, you know, the piece to bite off, you know. But
yeah. When I came back, I was all about, like, counting the days of life. Like, okay, we lived till we're about 80, so it's like 80,000 days. Just take 10.
You owe yourself 10.
Just 10 to experience something that's chemical free and can really show you something about yourself. Well, and give you the tools to find everything about yourself.
Totally, man. It's all inside of you. It's all there.
Right.
Well, I want to tell you something about, you talk about the non-chemical experience for 10 days and then, you know, because I was respecting that.
Yeah, me too. That was the scariest thing about going, was not smoking any weed for 10 days.
Bro, when I got back, feeling all in my equanimous state, you know, feeling like awesome, like right on, like very delicate, but like very good. And so I get back to Maine and I'm like very sensitive and like everything looks weird because I've been like not talking, like, you know, in the same space with these 40 same dudes, you know, like for 10 days in my head for all day long. And so I get back to Portland, it's a beautiful day. This is like 3 weeks ago too, by the way. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go, and I didn't really know what to do with myself. I'm like, I'm going to go walk the Back Bay, right? And it's like, I felt very confident in all that I achieved in myself, you know. I meditated this much and I achieved this. So I have this tendency, you know, from my past, to reward myself, which, so what did I do? I got negligent And it's like, well, I'm going to go have some cannabis, you know. And I'll tell you, man, like, so I did, this is interesting because I went, had some cannabis, went around the back bay, and like, I was, first of all, I was walking very fast, doing the meditation while I'm walking, which I don't know if you're supposed to do, but I was doing it.
No. I mean, they say that that's what yogis are. They're constantly doing that and in touch with their physical.
Oh, good.
You know, it's like, that's the grounding method.
Well, it was feeling very transcendental at that time with cannabis, for sure. Uh-huh. But it didn't feel, it felt dirty to me.
Right.
Because,
oh, I totally get
you know what I'm saying? Because you have clarity of mind, and you're doing this technique that's meant to be done with clarity of mind, but then you're throwing something else in there, I was like, feeling dirty, you know? So,
yeah.
That's my thing. Humbly, no, you know, not the right thing to do, but it was a good learning lesson, you know? It was interesting, but it changed my experience with the cannabis. Like, I was very, I mean, like, and the, but I looked at the equanimity in a different way, because when I smoke cannabis, I get paranoid and this stuff, you know, I get that stuff, you know, we all get that. But, like, this time, and walking by all these people, you know, super, super stoned, and I... But I was, like, able to be non-reactive. I was able to let the things that I empathetically would let them affect me, like their self-judgments that I'm imposing that they're doing to me.
Right.
I could just let it go. And that's not reacting. That was the equanimity. Yeah. So I still had that equanimity strongly, which affected my present state, mental state, when I was in the cannabis, the presence of the cannabis. So that was cool to experience.
Mm.
That was really cool to see.
Mm. Yeah. I can relate with that.
Mm, cool.
So it's just a little fuzzier, but you were still able to invoke the practice.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, the level of contentment when you get back is pretty, like, I don't even, like, yeah, I've always lived outside my body, and just the contentment that came was like...
Man, you don't hear many people saying that these days.
Mm.
Like, the... content. I feel content.
Mm.
I'm good.
Are you sure?
What?
Yeah. Right.
He must be running a fever.
And so it's peace. It's about, like, inner peace, right? Like, and not reacting.
Mm.
Oh, my God.
Mm.
If you just sit here, and typically how my brain is what it's thinking of, because, like, I learned when I first started meditating, I'm peeling of the onion, and I see all this little background stuff and all these things that it had to do and all the little taskings in my mind.
Mm.
You know, I had to shut down that, but they're always playing in the background.
Mm.
But if I can just, like, be here... Not react to anything, no thought, you know, like, you know, oh, go do that. I just be here. For me, as a veteran, like, that's really important with, like, what I'm going through.
Mm.
So I highly suggest this to veterans, first of all, in my situation.
Because,
like, when it comes to veterans and PTSD and what's going on, there's not a lot of good, solid treatments out there that are working.
Mm.
And so that's one thing. But, like, I was thinking about, like, you were talking about this, all my brothers and sisters in recovery.
Mm.
You know, I had a couple of them pop up that as soon as I got back, I contacted them. I said, here's a flyer I got for you for the
addiction.
Mm. So it's just like, and a friend of mine that smoked cigarettes, like, dude, if you do this, I promise.
Yeah, I finally got rid of cigarettes, thank God.
Really?
Yeah, totally.
That's awesome.
After which?
Yeah, it was like, I was never a heavy smoker, but I was like a closet smoker that had a cigarette, like, at night. And, like, you know, but, like, I hang out with a bunch of people that don't smoke cigarettes, you know, it's totally, like, shunned. And but finally I was able to give it up from going on these retreats.
After which retreat?
This past one is really, well, who knows if I'll ever smoke one again, but I haven't had one in 3 months since I got back, and that's probably the longest I've gone without one in a long time.
That's important.
Cheers.
And it feels great. Like, I don't want it. I got nothing for it. I'm not putting money in it anymore. I've been wanting to get out of it just to stop giving those bastards my money. The people that make cigarettes. Like,
you're
I don't want to give
aware
that
now.
Money. Yeah, right. There's that. Right. Right.
I think that's a good practical application for this, for the world, too, is addiction.
Mm.
And I think we all have issues with addiction, but I look at my aspects of addiction, and you know, I don't have any big addictions now. I was an alcoholic, and I gave that up 9 years ago. On Thursday will be my 9 years of sobriety, but I'm still an alcoholic.
Mm.
I have the mind. I get addicted to food. I get addicted to everything, you know, and so... And that, to understand, break down just the addictive mind, And how do you deal with that? Because right now, with the heroin epidemic and such in Portland,
right.
You know, like, it's such a thing, dude. And, like, people are like, we'll try this, go to a meeting. But it's, the addiction is getting so heavy, and I feel how heavy addiction can get and how difficult it is. This technique is one great component that can help knock down that big ant mound of crap,
yeah.
You know? And
right.
So it is powerful. So
the body gets addicted, so if you bungle out of your body, then there's the problem.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. And it's, you know, it's the not reacting, you know? Like, I mean, I'm really clear now when I want a cigarette. Like, that craving actually does show up still, and I see it so clearly. When it shows up, I can feel it, and luckily I now know how to, like, let it go. But, like, you know, it's definitely, like, a physical thing that comes up when something bothers me or whatever. And then it turns into that regular habit where it starts happening not because of something.
Exactly.
And then you just get lost in what's really the difference.
Then you dive right into the veil.
Here's the veil.
Here's my cigarette.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to drink some of that. Oh, I'm going to just sleep in for the all day today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, like, hey, yeah.
Yeah.
You forget all about Vipassana.
Well, what's
it's not hard.
So what about the continuing the practice? Because I can say that I have not continued the practice. On my 2-week fast, I'm going to be doing it twice a day. And I bought the Discourse book.
That's good.
I'm going to read that book each night for 10 days,
that's,
you know?
That's nice. That's a good idea.
But I feel like definitely when I got out of it, I have to make this. I felt that, like, I have to. Not an obsession or anything, but I have to make this a practice because of what it gave me. The control of myself, the self-respect of myself.
Mm.
You know, I need that as a tool to get through and achieve all the things I want in life, because life is freaking hard. You know, so, like, having something like that is definitely something I want to make it. I don't know. We'll see how my 2 weeks go, but I do want to make it at least once a day. But, like, the benefits of waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, man.
Oh, they're huge to start with. I love it.
And then you just sit right down, like, a few minutes later, you know, and then just start meditating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at first thing in the morning,
mm-hmm.
you know, and... Because if we do that, preset our mind in the beginning of the day, think about how the rest of our day is going to be. And if you do that every day, you know, how your whole week, your
mind. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think if you can find the 2 hours, I mean, it would be immensely helpful. And I think that's really the thing to sort of, especially after 3, it's like, you know, that whole environment, you really are training in a very special way. And it's like, while you're there, it all feels so normal. You know, it's like going into the deep part of it, you feel so fucking normal. It's when you get out that you're like, dude, I was somewhere else. And I still kind of am.
Totally.
Holy shit.
Totally.
But just having, like, ease with yourself is, like, so important. And the fact is that, like, us out here in the world is different than doing it there. And I know that it seems obvious, but it's like, having done it, we feel like we should be doing that to respect ourselves and do all that. But, like, it's hard. If you committed that time, you'd probably be really well off. Because you would be. But I think not doing it is just a symptom of our times. It seems really hard to do it. It's not that I'm not being spiritual. It's not that I'm not meditating at all. It's not that I'm not advancing and progressing and staying aware. But I'm just not doing that. But some of it is because I'm doing other things. So it's to in my spirituality and thinking and all that stuff. So, like, after 3 times, it finally really dawns on me that, like, really, like, following the discipline when you're there is really, like, you really want to focus on that, because doing that work when you're that deep is the real key. It's really almost pretty much impossible to do that kind of work here. Like, it's literally almost impossible. And I heard that this third time, that's what I took away from Goenka. They're like, they're not telling you that you should have the same experience every day. They're really telling you that while you're here, do what we're giving you, because that's what the Buddha gave. But, like, in the real world, in today's world, it's hard to do this if you're a householder. It's hard to do this if you have illness in life and whatever else. So it is literally said that, like, that is a training, and you are going there to train. And it's not going to be the same out here. Trying to benefit yourself, but it's not the same.
Thank you for reminding me of that.
Mm. Yeah, it's amazing that that took me a few times to get to. And also got to the place of just, you know, Vipassana is two words, awareness and equanimity. Like, that is the entire thing right there. Mm. Like, whatever you do to do those two things.
That is what I hear you guys saying over and over again, which, to paraphrase, sounds like you're gaining a skill when you go there. You're going through a boot camp training and you come out with a skill. And what that skill is a larger amount of awareness of yourself, your own thoughts, your body, your inner organs, people around you, a larger awareness and presence of mind, along with a lack of reacting to all those things you're aware of.
Right.
A stoic, steadfast, rock steady awareness with that does not get tossed by the tides of action and reaction, but drives straight ahead. And that, I mean, that feels really powerful.
Well said, bro.
Yeah, that is well said.
Exactly, because it's you
I'm
have.
Glad
to
that's what's coming out,
because from all that we've been saying.
Because I don't know what we really said.
We have a lot of excitement, you know, and you can't really understand this unless you experience it. Mm. You know, that's a big thing. Like, awareness has a different meaning for me now.
Mm.
It really, the word awareness means something totally different for me now, and through the experience, right? They talked about through the experience of it. And when you become aware of experiencing the itches and little things growing, hairs growing out of my arm, you know, and like down to
right,
like,
you're literally feeling that.
You're feeling these because it's you're aware. You're like, I'm aware of you. Like, you know, it could just be, okay, we're in a park and there's like 50 people walk around the park. It's a nice day. There's kites flying, you know, and I can just look and I just see a bunch of people in kites, right, and some trees, whatever. But if I stop and I focus on one person. Oh, I see. Okay, there's a person. Oh, you know, he has hair and he has a hat on and he's wearing a red shirt. Oh, now I see he has glasses. Oh, he's got an earring. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's got some cool tattoos. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you see what I'm saying? Like, the more you focus, you're more aware. I'm like, ah. So it's like, and so that means that, like, you're more aware of that. Like, life becomes more alive. We know, and you can really have more gratitude and appreciate it more. You know, and then it brings you down to the molecular level, and then you start to, you know, dissolve and
you know, and this is all leading into, like, how I understand and how they describe the emotional imprints of it all. Like, learning the idea that there is no subconscious. So, Goenka explains that, you know, there is no subconscious, so you are conscious of everything. And that what we're really reacting to is these deep emotional things. And as we sit quietly, these deep emotional things are able to bubble up to the surface. But just to back up to be clear, so, like, you know, the way he describes it and the way I understand it is basically like you see the leaf on that plant, and it comes into your eye and comes into your body and lands right here. And so every single piece of input that you experience through your eyes and your ears and your nose and everything is planted in you somewhere. And literally sitting long enough to let it bubble up is, it's this level of processing that, like, you know, when somebody says, well, I'm processing, to process this and I have to do that. It's like I would have never been taught that the physical act of the mental and physical act of doing a meditation is like a level of processing. And so that's kind of like, that's like I'm taking the words that I've heard in the world and applying them to this. So like when they talk about taking care of your shit, that's what this meant to me. Like it's my job to meditate to, like, take care of my shit so it doesn't bubble up into anger and reactivity and all of those kinds of things. And the more I meditate, the better that gets. And that's kind of like what you see over time. It's like the people that have meditated for 40 years have received great benefit and don't react as much because they've processed all their shit. So like when somebody makes me angry, it's usually angry because of something that happened 20 years ago that stuck right there that I didn't deal with.
Uh-huh.
And it's like that was is like the part of the metaphysical experience that I am. Is like the metaphysical, like I literally, you could, I mean, when you're done, you feel like light. It's like you let all this shit go and you don't even know what it was or where it came from. But you sat long enough for it to happen. And I think that's really why, like they say it's 10 days is the minimum. So like they've tried 7, they've said, you know, and anything more, you can get to that place of really like finding that freedom, that cleanliness. Like I think when you only get to Bongol when you like cleaned out a lot.
Yeah.
And I know that I had a lot to clean. And I think you always have to, because it just keeps coming. And that's the problem with the world. It's like so much input, so much stuff. Like, I have to not listen to the radio. I have to not watch the news. And funny enough, my life isn't all that different. So that idiot is still president, and I can't change that, really. And just all the bad things in the world can't change. But we can change what we do.
Can change the bad things inside of you.
Yeah. Yeah. We hit on that earlier. We just have to like identify and be able to hear what's good, and see how we, you know, how that bubbles up into the world.
I want to say amen or hallelujah, but not a spiritual, you know, or religious experience. But I think you guys feel me on that. It was definitely something that was. Amazing thing, dude, and you just hit it on top of the head right there, man.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so good to do that work for yourself.
Yeah.
It's just so good.
It's a powerful testimonial. I mean, you said you made reference to your PTSD driving you crazy before, and so you're saying you went to and sat silently for 10 days, and you came back, and you felt like your PTSD was not as severe.
It's I have a new tool to deal with it.
Right, it's a tool.
It's a tool, you know, and...
And it takes time to really make that work.
Totally, but I feel much better about it. Mm. I would say that people at my workspace that are with me every day have noticed that much more calm and peace from my inability to react so easily and interfere in things I don't have to interfere and get involved with other people's stuff.
Mm.
Why? Why do I do that?
Right.
You know, well, I want to help, whatever. No, it's causing more harm. So it's more efficiency thing too. You know, waste, you know, whatever, just running your mouth to say this and this because you know this or anything.
Yeah.
You don't really need to.
Oh, God, yeah.
Not my space. I don't really
right.
need to.
Right. Words can really be, just get in the way. And whether you want to say them or not, sometimes you just have to go back to doing your thing. And shut the hell up.
And sit there and meditate
and
in your noble silence.
Meditate. Yeah, noble silence. Which, by the way, noble silence is really, you're not just silent. You're like no talking, no looking. You don't look at anybody. No looking in anybody else's eyes. You're not reading, you're not writing, you're doing nothing. And that's what makes it so like crazy making when you're by yourself at 7 days having these experiences and you can't say shit. To anybody, you just have to experience it, which is why it's so freaking powerful.
In your head, eyes closed.
Yeah.
I mean, every time you guys describe it, like I get this visceral feeling like I'm staring into a giant pit that I might fall into.
It's the pit that you dug and you filled in with all the crap from your life that you don't want to look at.
Right. Yeah, no, it's like getting a shovel. It's like getting a shovel and digging out that pit. That's really what you're doing for 10 days. Just digging, 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 digging. Letting it come up. And you cry and you get angry and all of that stuff.
And then you get cleared up.
Well, then you talk and you come out into the world and you're like, holy fuck, I'm happy. Holy shit, I'm happy. I just experienced total hell and now I'm happy.
And I don't really want to talk either.
Yeah.
Like talking is just so unnecessary.
Right. Right.
People talk to me, I'm like...
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Smile.
Do I have to answer you? Not to be mean, but it's just like, it seems so unnecessary. You know, you see, it's just not needed.
People expect you to jibber-jabber.
Right. Right.
They come to you wanting just mindless syllables coming out of your mouth.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And you really, really see that and understand that clearly after a Vipassana.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm. Oh, that's beautiful. I do have so many more questions, but maybe we can just do
maybe we do a part two.
You guys, how about after I get out of the woods for my 2-week fast?
He's going to keep
Let's
going.
Let's touch base after that.
Yeah, actually, there's like a few things for me happening spiritually, too, in the next couple months. Maybe we should just do another show.
Let's do another sesh.
Bro, for sure, man.
Well, thanks for coming to the Outyard, you guys.
Yeah.
Bro, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us into this amazing kingdom that you have orchestrated here.
It is mighty.
Very much. And I'm glad to make the connection with you too, dude.
Yeah. Likewise.
Yeah.
Sounds like we'll have a lot to talk about.
Mm.
I'm gonna cut it. All right. Thank you guys for being here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
For being a retreat where the main attraction is silence, they had a lot to say about it. And I had a lot more questions to ask them. It seemed like we could have gone on for another couple hours. Maybe we will revisit it sometime. I really wanted to press them a little more on metaphysical experiences that they started getting into. It sounded like there might have been some lucid dreaming, there might have been some out-of-body experiences, but we really didn't finish talking about those things because there were so many things to say about the experience overall and what was gained from it. Both of them came away from a 10-day silent meditation really feeling like it was one of the most valuable things that they had done, and feeling committed to continuing a meditation practice in their daily lives and perhaps returning for more Vipassana, more 10-day chunks of silent communal meditation. What a wild experience. This is probably something that most of you have never considered doing. Maybe now you'll think about it. Maybe just thinking about it is interesting enough. The option is there. There are apparently places all around the world set up for you to sign up if you can manage a chunk of your time, if you can figure out how to give yourself 10 days to go do this. It sounds like one of the healthier things you could do for your mind. Difficult, maybe not fun at times, but it sounds like you come out on the other side feeling stronger, more confident in yourself, and more able to deal with the things you're presented with on a daily basis. That sounds invaluable to me. I'm certainly thinking about doing it. I know at this point in my life, finding 10 days seems impossible. Some of us have busier lives than others. I have tiny toddlers, and probably when they're older, I'll manage to figure out how to fit this in my schedule. But for those of you that don't, it's just a phone call away. Does anyone even make phone calls anymore? It's just an email, probably, or a text message, or some kind of Snapchat away. I don't know. But I hope you enjoyed that installment of The Outyard. We have many more heading your way. My name is Peter Crow, and I'd just like to remind you to follow your heart and have a good night.
The Outyard is supported by listeners. If you love the show, show your support by visiting patreon.com/outyard or at our homepage, www.outyard.org.